to the Jesuit Schools Network Ignatian Inquiry Podcast. The JSN seeks to be a supportive resource to our member schools, and this podcast is designed to be just that, a carved out space to listen, learn, and engage with issues that matter to our collective work as Ignatian educators. We are eager to encourage a spirit of inquiry across the many layers of our work in Jesuit education. We envision our particular brand of Ignatian inquiry to be the art of inquiry as seen through our Ignatian lens, asking questions and exploring issues that matter in our schools through the frame of our shared Jesuit mission. On today's episode, we will speak with Mr. Patrick Gallagher, Director of College Counseling at Gonzaga College High School in Washington, D.C., and a longtime enrollment professional with robust experience on both sides of the admissions desk. The topic of college admissions has been in the news in a myriad of ways this academic year, from standardized testing, affirmative action, and rising tuition costs, to FAFSA upheaval and the intersection of politics on the admissions process. We will explore how this has been experienced in the college counseling offices at the Jesuit secondary level as counseling professionals work to support the needs of the students in their care. How can Jesuit schools navigate their own way in the midst of the many pressures our students face today? Patrick Gallagher is a dedicated professional with more than 30 years of experience in post-secondary enrollment and college counseling, currently serving as the Director of College Counseling at Gonzaga College High School in Washington, D.C. Having spent 15 years in college enrollment management and the last 20 years in college counseling, Patrick understands the nuances of the ever-changing admissions process. He has demonstrated a profound commitment to facilitating access to higher education for students from diverse backgrounds, as well as stressing the importance of fit. With a keen understanding of the intricacies of the enrollment process, as well as the strategies needed to navigate the admissions process, Patrick is always willing to educate families and students, as well as institutions. Driven by a passion for empowering individuals to pursue their educational aspirations, Patrick has been instrumental in fostering partnerships with educational institutions, community organizations, and other stakeholders to promote college readiness and access initiatives. In addition to his professional endeavors over the last 35 years, Patrick has served on dozens of college advisory boards and works closely with the Obama Foundation in Chicago regarding college readiness for the underrepresented. Dr. Cully and Mr. Gallagher, welcome to the podcast. How is everyone doing today?
Doing well. Thank you for having me.
Doing great. Thank you, Kristen. And Patrick, I'm so happy that you're joining us this afternoon. I've been really looking forward to this conversation.
No, it's good to be here and happy to talk to you about all things college admissions and high school college counseling. I mean, I knew you years ago when you were a college counselor, and I find the whole college landscape to be really interesting, and it's things that I enjoy talking about and learning about. For better or for worse, I do enjoy what I do.
Exactly. No, I know that. And that's one of the things we have so much to talk about today. I think probably the best place to begin, you know, tell us about where you are now. So tell us about Gonzaga.
So it's a special place. I'm fortunate that I worked at more than one Jesuit institution. I was at Georgetown Prep for about 10 years as director of college counseling, and then worked in college admissions at Loyola Maryland as well. And that was 30 years ago. And what I really like about Gonzaga is that it truly is a Jesuit school. It really lives its mission, which I really appreciate. And, you know, the finish line at a Jesuit high school is that you want to develop young men and women for others. But at the same time, you want them to go to good colleges, good post-secondary institutions as families are making investments. But the one thing that I really appreciate about Jesuit education, and one that I really appreciate about Gonzaga, is that if you think of a high school being a ship, they have a great rudder where the mission is the Jesuit mission. And everything that our head of school does and our president does, any decision that they make, it's in context of what's best for the boy. We're an all-boys school. What's best for the boy, what's best for the families, what's best for the institution. And it's in that order. And with the rudder, I think it has good direction. When I have not been at a mission-based school, sometimes there is no rudder. And it's the institution just goes around in circles and circles. And sometimes what might be important to one department isn't important to the administration and vice versa. And what I really appreciate about Gonzaga is that it is truly a Jesuit school, and it does have a rudder, and it does have a direction.
it's really one of the most refreshing things about our schools, isn't it? And I think your background is so diverse. You know, you have worked in so many different settings, so you probably really do have a keen sense of that, like feeling that almost every day at work and knowing how special it is.
It is. And that's what I really appreciate about Jesuit education, is that the mission can be there in terms of the, you know, this is what we're about, but the school doesn't necessarily walk the walk. And Gonzaga does walk the walk. And, you know, we want boys to reflect on their decisions. And that might be what course decisions they're taking, their own personal decisions, what they choose to do with their summers. But also we try to incorporate that in the college counseling process, where's the best fit? We want you to go to the best institution, but we also, where's the best fit? Where can you be the most meaningful person to yourself, to others, to your family, and to what you believe at an institution that you're at? So yeah, a name is important, but just what's more important is also the fit. Will you thrive in that institution? And will that institution be better for having you there?
That's really such a thoughtful definition, or I guess representation of student-centered learning. You know, you really do have this like crazy complex process. You really do have the young man in this case at the center of it. You know, Patrick, as I listen to you, I think, you know, you mentioned we've known each other for a while. I think I met you in 1999, my first year at Regis High School in New York City, and you were at Loyola Maryland at that point when I was a brand new counselor. So,
yeah, I would visit all the New York schools. It was great. Visit all the New York schools, Catholic, public, and private. And Loyola College was still receives a lot of students from the area. So it was a great experience. And that was a long time ago. And so much has changed just in the admissions landscape. And, you know, looking back on it, some of it is very, very good. And then some of it is not. It's always been a business, but it's really become a business in the last 30 to 40 years, where a student that may have been applying to a school 30 years ago, or even 15 years ago, and even sometimes 8 years ago, the landscape continually changes, and it seems to change quicker and sooner than it did in the past, in terms of just everything seems to be sped up. And I sometimes really see the business side of the admissions complex that's been built. And as a consequence, that is very hard for a young person and for a family to navigate, to figure out what's important to them when colleges are saying so much is important and you need this, this, and this. But then at the same time, it's like, oh, well, that's not maybe who I am. So there's a real kind of dichotomy that isn't always healthy, meaning that, for example, I always say to the guys that we work with, the admissions process makes even the best student feel bad about themselves now. Okay. Meaning that, you know, when a student applies to a college, and particularly the schools that a lot of the guys will look at a lot of Jesuit high schools in the U.S., they're looking for, you know, very competitive schools, which they should be. But at the same time, the process has gotten so difficult, or so much of it is strategy now, that I feel like it really leaves out the applicant in a lot of ways, where they don't feel good about themselves, even when they are a strong student, or if they're a late bloomer, or they mature later academically. Sometimes they might not necessarily feel that they have a place in the process, and they do. And just an example is, you know, when I was in high school in the 80s, I couldn't say, oh, I'm going to such and such school that's ranked number 3 for journalism in the Mid-Atlantic states. Because that list didn't exist in the 1980s. So what I knew is that, oh, I was going to a really good school with a really good journalism program. End of story. But now, because everything's assigned a number, and with social media, and with the idea is that, oh, if it's harder to get into, it must be better. That's not always the case. A lot of times it's not the case. So consequently, that's where I feel that a lot of times applicants at any high school, public, private, non-denominational, it's a process that really can make somebody feel bad about themselves. And that's what has been really frustrating in terms of how so much of this admissions task and process has really become about a business and marketing. And I get that point, that it has to be. But at the same time, I feel like it leaves out the actual 17-year-old.
Right. It feels, everything feels so high stakes, and you have a child, you know, an adolescent who's coming to be. And, you know, I used to always tell the kids that I worked with, like, who peaks in high school? You don't want to be the kid that peaks in high school. You know, there's so much good to come, but.
Yeah. And we all know people that in our own lives that have peaked in high school. And sometimes you're like, whoa, okay. You know, they peaked in high school and that's kind of sad.
Right. And then it's like interwoven with families and parents and, you know, child's hopes and dreams and expectations. And you have a really unique view of it, I believe, because of where you sit, you know, in your background. So I'm curious to pick your brain a little bit. You know, I think about this year, everything that has been in the news, in the media that has been related to college admission, the list is long. I mean, SAT, standardized testing, affirmative action, and rising tuition, if I'm correct, Tufts and Boston University and Yale, whose full tuition, you know, including everything, is now upwards of $90,000 a year. The intersection of politics and higher education, high turnover, the FAFSA, you know, the anxiety in kids, like the list is goes on and on. I'm really interested in what has all of that meant for the average Jesuit high school student? Like, how has the average kid experienced all of that?
Yeah, so it's interesting that you asked that. So obviously, it's a lot of pressure. A lot of times it can be by the family because the family expects a lot, as they should. But then there's the pressure from outside and then the media of the idea of the best, I got to get into the best school. I got to get into the best school because that's going to determine my whole career and trajectory in terms of what I'm going to do. And, you know, I always say to families that the majority of colleges out there want to accept students. There are about 4,000 accredited four-year institutions, and the majority of them want to accept students. However, a lot of times, the high schools that I've been in, Jesuit or non-Jesuit, tend to be in communities where everyone concentrates on the same 150 schools out of the 4,000. And those 150 schools have the lowest acceptance rates that they've been able to create through their own enrollment management procedures, like something called early decision binding. I think that a lot of times, particularly at a lot of the Jesuit high schools and even my own experience in the DC community, everyone is fixated on this idea that no one gets in anywhere. And that is not the truth. In a lot of communities, particularly communities that have been fortunate to have resources and value higher ed, everyone tends to concentrate on the same schools where the acceptance rate is very, very low. So it gives the impression that no one gets in anywhere. And particularly to a 17-year-old boy, having, you know, with boys, all they hear is no one's getting in anywhere, or the neighbor down the street didn't get in, or so-and-so had a friend that was perfect in everything that they did and they didn't get in. It really is the pressure where I feel like it makes the student feel that maybe they can't be authentic in the admissions process because they have to be that extra special. You know, I always say I've never seen a funeral hearse ever have a college decal in the back of it. Okay. I've seen every car have a college decal in the back of it, but meaning I've never seen a funeral hearse that ever had a college name on it or proud mother or proud father of such and such a student. And I just know, I think, you know, we kind of grew up in the same time, Kristen. My parents would never have had a bumper sticker like that on their car. And I'm not saying that that's wrong, but it's just very, very different. And the idea is that, you know, there's so much, I think, for a lot of students where they feel like so much is at stake in terms of what their family's pride is and their accomplishment. And it's now a family endeavor to go to college and the name of the school and that type of thing. And in terms of how I've seen that, you know, with high school students is that that's a lot of pressure on them. And they're fortunate to have the resources, but at the same time, that's a lot of pressure is that they don't want to fail anyone. And usually it's that they don't want to fail other people.
Right. And all of the messages and the thoughts, I guess, that they're getting from every corner of what's, you know, and I use this in quotes, like what's good, what's a good school, what's a...
Yeah, your school's going to define you for the rest of your life. And, you know, the idea is that, you know, we are still evolving as we're getting older. Now, I know that as a 58-year-old man, but when I was 17, I thought I knew everything. I had all the answers. And as you get older, you sometimes become more comfortable with ambiguity and not always knowing the answer. But at 17, you feel like you have to know the answer. And if you don't know the answer, you feel as if you're deficient in some ways. So you're not comfortable with that ambiguity at that age. And that's something that can only come in time. And, you know, so a lot of times the admissions process in the U.S. does not necessarily work where a typical 17-year-old student is in their life or who they are as a person. You know, one caveat is that a lot of schools now, you know, they're still liberal arts and you can be undecided, but it's some schools that are very competitive. If you go in as one major over another, it's harder to get into. They still call themselves liberal arts schools. But wait a minute, if I really want to go there, if I apply as a business major, I have a less chance of getting in than I do in the arts and sciences. Well, is that really a liberal arts school anymore? Because you're kind of doing the strategy to get in, but that might negate you from getting into a particular program because it's gotten so competitive. So, you know, and a lot of times I think students don't understand the complexities that are there, but at the same time, a student doesn't necessarily need to have all the answers at 17, but sometimes I feel like the process kind of demands that of them where they feel that that's being put upon them. And I think that adds to a lot of pressure. And then also the cost. The cost is just really skyrocketed, you know, and we see all the student debt in the country. And so the idea of, in terms of what it's going to cost, what it's going to cost to the family, I think 17-year-olds sometimes don't necessarily understand the value of what a loan means. And I think that's very challenging for families. And no one wants to tell their kid they can't go to a school because they, you know, can't afford it. But, you know, for most Americans, that's the truth. And that's another added stressor on it. And then also like with diversity, particularly with the diverse students that I've worked with, is that, you know, there's a concern about everything that they read in the news, which isn't always correct. But what they're hearing or what they're reading is, okay, wait a minute, am I more disadvantaged? And what does this mean? And you know, should I not be my true authentic self in the process? Because it might not bode well for me, or other people might think I'm using it, and they're not. You know, as you know this from your own experience in education, colleges want to build a diverse place. And in my opinion, that's what Jesuit education is about. You encounter things that you don't know about, and you learn about it, and you appreciate it, even though it might be something that you're not studying or live your way. But the idea is that you have appreciation for the other things around you that might be different or have a different upbringing or a different way of doing things. But that's all of the same God that we talk about in Jesuit education. As you know, my God's the same God as someone that's totally different from me. And that's the beauty of God. But sometimes people don't think that way. They have to feel like they're cookie cutter. They've got to be this, this, and this. I always joke, and if any families that are listening to this that are doing college tours, you know, any admissions office that you go to, oh, last year was the best year for applications. It was the highest rate we ever had. It was the strongest GPA ever we had. It was the strongest testing score we ever had of those that reported it. And I'm just always waiting for them to say that the average height of the applicant increased as well, because they're telling you everything that's so great. And you're sitting there, and typically for a 17-year-old boy, they're going to be like, well, that's not me. That's not me. That's not me. You know, and the idea is that it's become such a business that a lot of times students think, I can't see myself at that place, because what they're asking for is kind of humanly impossible. But they don't call it humanly impossible, meaning the student. They're like, that's just not me, but I have to be that way. You know, they play to what they think what they want admissions to hear. And that's a lot of stress.
It is. And it's just a lot for a young person to navigate and for a school to navigate. Like I think this conversation is so relevant to all of our secondary and pre-secondary schools, because, you know, we use the phrase college readiness, college preparedness, you know, and that's where things lead to. And you hear about it in course selection for young students or scores. And, you know, and they're in the midst of this like massive adolescent mental health crisis. Like, it's just so many of our institutions and paths, we send mixed messages to kids. Mm-hmm. As I listen to you, I take a pause and I remember that, you know, that it's a complex, really challenging time for students and for families. But as the adults that have a shape in learning and helping kids navigate, to remember it and understand it, I am interested. Do you, given all of what you just said, given the cost and the stressors and the idea of the 150, you know, schools amongst 4,000, kind of that supply and demand, are you seeing a change in focus of kids? Like, are more students interested in things beyond a four-year degree, like trade school, military?
Sometimes I do. I mean, sometimes I think a gap year is appropriate. And sometimes a gap year doesn't necessarily mean because the student isn't ready. It's may they may not be ready in something, or they might want to work for a year, or they might want to do a year of maturation. And if I had my druthers, I think every high school student should work a year in the service industry and then apply to college. You know, they learn a lot in a restaurant. They learn a lot on, you know, a dock or a platform at Walmart where they're doing deliveries, that type of thing. I mean, you know, that's the real essence of like, wow, this is what, you know, life is about for a lot of students. And I think for Jesuit high school students, you know, the idea of seeing how other people live and the idea of having an appreciation for how they live, but also is it the way that they want to go. One thing that I have seen is that, and this is where I feel like our job, college counselors in any high school, is to try to make families aware of the schools that they might not be aware of. Meaning, as I said, the majority of schools out there want to admit students. The accept rates are well above 50%. And just because they're above 50% doesn't mean that they're bad schools. They have the exact same accreditation. You know, a school that might have a 68% acceptance rate has the same accreditation for business schools and for the STEM programs that a school might have with a 17% or an 8% acceptance rate. So a lot of times I always look at the accreditations that a school has, that their particular programs have, and they're usually the same. And the idea is that they have to hold to the same standards, but people tend to put that, oh, it must be better if it's harder to get into, but they're basically very, very similar in terms of how they have to do their curriculum. So I feel like a role of the college counselor, my role is to try to get students and families to become aware of schools that they may never have heard of before. And there are a lot of good schools out there. So I feel like some students are, you know, thinking possibly a gap year or, you know, sometimes community college and then transferring into to another school. And then in some cases, they might go into a trade or something along those lines. But what I would also want to put in that category is think outside the box, just not necessarily the schools that maybe your community goes to or the name schools that people tend to follow in your communities where, you know, everyone goes to these top six or seven schools. The one thing that I really like about Gonzaga is that you will have about 230 graduating students, anywhere from 230 to 240. And like last year's class, they went to 91 different institutions in 30 states, the District of Columbia, and then overseas. And the boys are very, very fortunate in terms of being well prepared. And a lot of them are fortunate to have families with resources. But I love the eclecticism of where we weren't sending 27 guys to one school. That, you know, it was almost kind of like they were going out in twos and threes, but they were going to Spokane, Washington, or they're going to California, or they were going to, you know, somewhere in Ireland, or they were going to the New England or the South. We didn't have large, large groups going just to one school. And the idea is that I felt like that was what Jesuit education was about, is that you're preparing them for college prep and success, but you're preparing them to experience things that might be different. And that might be a different part of the country or a different way of thinking or truly liberal arts schools or just a STEM school or something along those lines. So there's a lot of choices out there, but everyone doesn't necessarily. I feel like that's very hard to think that way when you're hearing about what everyone tends to concentrate in your community. And that's usually the schools that have a very low acceptance rate. Does that make sense in terms of that?
It makes a lot of sense. And it's also a testament, I think, you know, to the culture at Gonzaga, just that there is a willingness to look beyond the familiar and to be open. I mean, isn't that one of the ways, like, we hear so much about achievement culture and this kind of constant drive of kids, but that's one of the ways that you counteract it, you know, is to focus on the big world that's out there and that, you know, you don't have to do the same thing that everyone is doing. There's an acceptance within the school that like serves and promotes that, which I really admire.
Yeah. And I'm fortunate because I've been at Gonzaga for the last 5 years. And I think a lot of Jesuit high schools are like Gonzaga, but we're fortunate in terms of like our president and our head of school and our board of trustees. They're open to those type of things. And that really allows in our office to, you know, say, okay, well, maybe you do want to take a look at schools in Minnesota, like a McAllister or St. Olaf. And, you know, sometimes the students and the families aren't familiar with those, but at least they'll look at them. And that's, you know, that's something. But what I'm really concerned about about is what you kind of mentioned is, you know, the well-being of the student, because the process makes them feel less than rather than greater than. And it's now such a huge expense for a family in terms of colleges and that type of thing. It can change the rhythm of a household, if that makes sense, during the whole admissions process. And everyone gears up, and we always joke in our office that, and this is anywhere I've ever worked, you can always tell when there's been a dinner party somewhere. You know, it's like you get the calls, well, I heard this, or, you know, somebody at this dinner party was saying that, you know, their son or daughter has already done this at their school. And, you know, does that put my child at a disadvantage? And, you know, 99% of the time, the answer is no. But the idea of the conspicuousness of like where you go in the college process and that type of thing can really take over, and it can make a young person feel very diminished. I think it can make grown adults feel very diminished. And I think particularly in some of the communities where I've worked, that's really been the driving force in terms of like, I need to go to the best place. And, you know, I always think, well, no, there are a lot of good places that are out there. One thing that does concern me, one thing that's, you know, changed in the last 30 or 40 years that I've been doing this is that, you know, years ago, I would say, go to the best place that you've gotten into, the best academically, where you feel like it's a good fit. And I still believe that, but there's a part of me now that go where you're wanted. Go where you're wanted and follow the money, to be quite honest with you. You know, in terms of that, I mean, if you look at the list of successful CFOs in this country and where they've gone to college, the majority have not gone to those schools that have acceptance rates under 50%, because the average acceptance rate in this U.S. for the 4,000 schools is close to 70%. And people tend to think, oh, if I don't go to a school with an 11% acceptance rate, it's not. No, there are a lot of good schools out there. But that's one thing that has really changed in terms of the cost of school. It is not fallen into the same categories as, you know, buying a car or, you know, that type. It's gone way past inflation. And I think part of it is that a lot of times I'll say that high schools have become what colleges were to me in the 80s, and colleges have become cruise ships. So you go to visit colleges, you see all the eating facilities, you see the athletic centers for the non-athlete, you see everything, the rooms and, you know, the eating services. And, you know, there's a school in Florida that actually has its own lazy river, and that all costs money. And I understand why colleges have to do that. They call it the amenities war. But, you know, you go into a college bookstore now and it's like a department store. Where when I was in the 80s, it was, you know, a room that had books and some jerseys and supplies. And now, you know, they have all of the amenities that go along with it. So part of what I've realized is that I tell students, go where you're wanted and follow the money if that works out for you in terms of the scholarships, the merit-based or the grants, because that is available at a lot of the schools. Now, it might not be at the most competitive schools in terms of the lower acceptance rate, but they're at a lot of the schools will have merit money because they want to attract students to come.
Yeah, no, go where you're wanted. I used to love when, you know, a student had been pursued by a particular university or was really, you know, treated so well after having perhaps experienced a deferral at the early stage, and they were crushed, and you knew as the adult that it would work out, that things would come around. But for the particular student to really feel wanted and valued in that process, like, matters. And that's the thing, again, at the crux of this, that's like the theme of this conversation, is there's a young person at the heart of it. I never blame the parents at the dinner parties, because as a parent, you don't want your child to fall behind. Mine are toddlers now. I don't want them to fall behind, you know?
You know, I always say this, is that I never find fault with someone that loves their kid. I never find fault with that, you know, in terms of that. But a lot of times I think what may happen is that, particularly if you're in communities where people are fortunate to go to a four-year school and things along those lines, so much worth is put into names, and the pressure that's put on a 17-year-old, that's a lot. And there are a lot of good schools out there. And as you just mentioned, your own experience is that a lot of times a student will be going to a school that maybe they never heard of in the 11th grade. and they do absolutely wonderful at that school, and they do really, really well, and they graduate. It's a great platform for them to jump off. And the idea is just trying to get students to and families to open up that there are a lot of good schools that are out there. Yeah. One thing that I have seen in the last 10 years is state schools. State schools have become extremely popular, and state schools have always, always been very strong schools. But what we have seen, and a lot of my colleagues have seen, is that state schools have great programs, and sometimes the price is right. But as a result, state schools that used to be schools where admission would occur for the majority of successful students isn't happening anymore. Like in our backyard, it's University of Maryland has gotten extremely competitive to get into. And it doesn't mean that it wasn't, I always say this, it's not that it's better now than it was 30 years ago. It was just always really, really good. But now the idea is that with the expense increasing, follow the money. You know, and other schools in this area, like UVA, is, you know, very, very competitive to get into, always has been, but has kind of become what the Ivy public. And then all of the other state schools in Virginia as well have gotten as the application got harder. I always say, you know, that the tide has risen. So as a consequence, when one school goes up, the schools that maybe were schools that were kind of backups to that school, and I don't like using that term backups, but a lot of times where students would also look if they were looking at the school that has gotten competitive to go into, now all of the tide goes up. So as a consequence, the acceptance gets harder and harder as it's kind of a trickle down. But the Southern schools, state schools, have gotten incredibly popular. And a lot of times it's a great fit for a lot of the Jesuit guys. And sometimes it can be more affordable. So that's been a big change the last couple of years. Most Jesuit, and you'll know this, for most Jesuit graduates, high school graduates, they'll look at Georgetown and BC as they should. However, part of me thinks if you're looking at BC and Georgetown, we kind of have an unwritten rule in our office, then you need to add more Jesuit schools to that list. Meaning, you know, Georgetown and BC are wonderful schools. They just happen to have very low acceptance rates. And they're wonderful people that go there and wonderful people that work there. And they've gotten very, very competitive to get into. And then as a consequence, part of me is like, if Georgetown and BC are on your list, well, there are, you know, 20 plus other good Jesuit schools around the country as well that want you there as well. They want students from Jesuit high schools. They want men and women that have gone to Jesuit high schools that know the mission and are college ready. And a lot of times those Jesuit schools want you there. And the idea is that there's merit money available to students that go there, particularly from Jesuit high schools. So that's something that we really kind of emphasize in our office, is that a Jesuit school isn't for everybody. Okay, college, I get that. But if students do have the most known Jesuit colleges on their list, or that's where they really want to go, or they would be very, very happy going there, part of me is like, okay, well, if you're looking at those, you need to look at the other Jesuit schools on the West Coast and in the Midwest and, you know, in the New England area and the upper state New York area, is that there are a lot of Jesuit schools there. Once again, those schools want kids from Jesuit high schools, and a lot of times they'll have merit money for them to make it more affordable to go there, because a Jesuit student is a known entity. They're going to be successful wherever they go. It's a no-brainer for a college. Well, yeah, we want somebody that's going to be thriving here, that knows our mission, but also can think outside the box. So that's kind of an internal rule that we have in our office. And some students don't want to continue the Jesuit college. You know, they want to go, and that's fine. But I always think if you're looking at some of the top Jesuit or Catholic colleges in the U.S., part of me is like, well, you should also be looking at the other Jesuit Catholic schools in the country that, you know, that their acceptance rates may not be so low. You know, I always say the God at UVA is the same God at Boston College, it's the same God at Loyola Maryland, same God at UC San Diego, in my opinion. So a lot of times I've had boys come in that are going to maybe a non-denominational school for the first time in college, and they're excited, but they're also nervous. And I'm like, well, okay, wait a minute, think about this. And this happens a lot with UVA. I'm like, well, isn't the God at UVA the same God at the other school that you were thinking about going to? Yeah. And they're like, yeah, I never thought of it that way. And it is the same God.
You know, as I listen to you, I think about, you know, I'm always interested in like articulating what is special about Jesuit education. You know, you and I have committed our careers to, you know, this wonderful endeavor. But thinking about what's special about Jesuit education and the approach to college counseling. And I think you're saying so much of it, you know, a school that might say that you really need to focus on the fit. And that means what's good for me is not necessarily good for everyone else, like to really reflect on that, which means getting to know yourself. You know, that's special.
And then also appreciating what somebody else might be interested in that you're not interested in, but you appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. And then keeping your mind open to pursuing something that maybe you don't even know about today, but you might really know about it tomorrow, you know, and exploring that and paying attention to the idea of feeling valued, which is what you say, you know, go to a school that wants you. Like there is really something special. Kids have a tendency to say, oh gosh, I got in here. What does that mean? You know, do I want to go there? But those are all very special, special things. And I think paying attention to, like you said, loans and all of it and cost and money, like it isn't just the name brand. It's not just the rankings. The reason you come to a Jesuit secondary school is to get into a name college. We're just about so much more than that. That might happen, and that's terrific.
And a lot of times it does for a lot of the students at Jesuit high schools, but it doesn't necessarily need to define you. I think one thing that I really appreciate being at a Jesuit school is that on student questionnaires, I can ask questions. And one of the questions that I ask a lot of times with students that I work with is if God had a bookshelf, what three books would be on God's bookshelf? And the responses that you get from, you know, a 17-year-old boy, they're always really interesting. But what three books they list in that brag sheet that they fill out or the questionnaire is amazing. Sometimes it's incredibly comical, but then sometimes it's actually very beautiful and touching. I had a student talked about, you know, he would say, you know, he had lost his grandmother and he said his grandmother's recipe book. But then I had a student that said his family album would be on God's bookshelf. And I asked him why. And he said, well, I would want God to see where he went wrong. And I thought that was so funny. He was kind of making fun of his own family. He had this ability to kind of say, like, our family isn't perfect, the good, the bad, and the ugly, but they're my family. And that's what I kind of really appreciate about Jesuit education. And I think at all the Jesuit high schools, the guys and the girls that go to the Jesuit high schools, I feel that in some ways they're able to examine themselves, but at the same time, hopefully examine themselves in a true way, but not necessarily be so hard on themselves at the same time. And we all know the admissions process to college is totally imperfect. It is not a meritocracy at all. A lot of times, you know, what people would judge where somebody does really well in life and they've made it, you know, they've been successful, they've left a legacy. Well, a lot of times they haven't gone to college or they didn't go to that name school. So it's a very imperfect process. And I think that the one thing that I like about Jesuit education and just in terms of faith and, you know, the spiritual exercises is that you deal with the good and the bad and sometimes not the so great. And the idea is that you find the constancy of the divine in that. And so there's a part of me that's like the admissions process is the good, the bad, and the ugly as well. You know what? There's a semblance of something good in that. And that good is in you and it's in other people and it's in your friends and it's in your family and it's in the community that you might be a part of that you never heard of 2 years ago out of a college. I like that kind of the idea that hopefully Jesuit high schools allow students to be human, particularly when they're dealing with an admissions process that is not perfect and is more human than any college will ever say that it is. It is not a meritocracy, that there are a lot of different variables at play.
No, now I'm thinking about what three books would be on my shelf. That's a challenge. I got to give.
No, think about it. And that's what I appreciate about Jesuit education is that, you know, it's asking a 17-year-old boy that at a Jesuit high school, they might not get it. They might be like, what? But the idea is that, you know, that they've had educational experiences in the classroom, be it in history or in math or where, okay, wait a minute. I do need to think this way. I do need to think this way because it will reveal something to me about myself and those around me.
It was really one of the things that I always loved about working on the applications with the kids was you do really get to know them. Like it's so much more than grades and scores. It's about like, why are you interested in these classes? Who are you? You know, I have such a really profound respect for the work that you do with young people because it is such a pivotal point in their development that is challenging, or it can be a wonderful chance to to get to, you know, be further enlightened into like who you are and what you want to be. And you get to see it.
It's great. As I said, you know, like I really like what I do. I really do. And you know this, we're really fortunate with all the Jesuit high schools and the Cristo Rey communities. It's a great network. So if we have a student that's interested in a school in another part of the country, and we don't know much about that college or university, or, you know, in terms of what that can, you know, bring to that young person by going there or looking there. As you know, this, the Jesuit High School College Counselor Association, it's a very tight group of all the Jesuit high school counselors across the United States. We meet twice a year in person. And you know, we tour schools together, colleges together. And you know this from our days when we work together, is that we have a day of meetings where we talk about what is going on in higher ed, what is going on at the colleges, what is it, you know, how can we make our own high school programs better for the students that we're working with. So someone might have an idea at one school that has really worked well with another school. And the idea is, it's the sharing amongst the Jesuit High School College and Counseling Association is amazing. You can always pick up a phone and you have a question, and you get an answer within a few hours from somebody that knows what they're talking about in a different part of the country about something that you may not be aware of at your own high school about another part of the country.
No, it is a wonderful group of colleagues that really are just a tremendous resource for everyone doing the work. I'm interested, Patrick. So you have, you know, so much experience at this point. When you meet a new college counselor, you know, like the me that was back in 1999, what do you say to them? Like, where do you start in this?
Yeah, I think a lot of times I'll say to, like, you know, someone that might be young and saying, how to go, make it about the student. Don't necessarily make it about the college list. Don't necessarily make it about, okay, maybe what the parents are expecting and sometimes demanding. Don't make it, you know, about the high school profile that, you know, we got a certain amount of kids placed in these colleges. No, I mean, they're all variables that will kind of, you know, be its own pressure. Make it about where they are, meet them where they are, but also let them know wherever they are, it's okay. And if they're in a place that's not great, it's like, okay, you got to step it up. You got to step it up. Kids know it when they need to step up. They know it. But a lot of times when they hear it from their parents, it's like it's nails on chalkboard. You know, sometimes having it come from a different person, so that would be you make it about the applicant. You don't necessarily make it about the parents, the high school, or the colleges. That's one thing that, you know, I love people that, I mean, we both worked on the college side, as you know, and I love the people at the college side, but so much of it turns out to be about the rankings. And, you know, they're under a tremendous amount of pressure. People that work at colleges are tremendous to bring in the best class, to bring in the best class, to bring in the strongest class, bring in the most diverse class, bring in the class that, you know, doesn't need as much aid in some cases. So the idea they're under a tremendous amount of pressure as well. And so a lot of times this process that's supposed to be about a 17-year-old kid, a lot of times it's all of the vying variables outside of the process that tend to get people's attention or the light shone on them rather than the 17-year-old kid. And that would be my advice. Make it about the applicant.
I think what you just said, make it about the boy, make it about the student. I mean, that really is part of every role of every educator who's working with kids. You know, if you think about it, leadership, make it about the student. It isn't so much about this formula or that learning or whatever. It's about the student at the heart of the classroom. It is about the service trip, but it's about the student experiencing the service trip. I mean, that's, thank you for that.
Yeah, I was fortunate when I was at Georgetown Prep, I worked with this woman, Meg Fraser, who you probably knew. She was the academic dean there for a long time. And I've worked for a lot of great people and a lot of great people, and I still do. But the person that really kind of revealed to me what Jesuit education is about, Meg Fraser would have been one of those. You know, I always say that she's one of the best Jesuits I've ever met. Just her approach to families and to teachers and to administration and to board of trustees, it was always, she always had her, the rudder was there and the Jesuit mission was there. And she was the one that, you know, when I got on the high school side, she's like, you know, make it about the boy, make it about the student, make it about the girl, make it about the boy, you know, be there for them because they'll know if you're there for them and they'll trust you.
Right. No, that's the, as you said in the beginning, that's the, that's the finish line, right? And the idea that the mission of our schools is really what holds us steady in the midst of so much. So thank you, Patrick. I think I could probably talk more hours and hours, you know.
Same with me. Yeah, same with me. I appreciate the time. And, you know, I really believe in Jesuit education. And there's so many, as you know, good people. A lot of my best friends are from the Jesuit world in terms of people I've worked with. It's a good group, and it's a group with a common goal and a rudder. Sometimes in a world where, you know, the rudder can't see through the water, but at least you know you have the rudder and you have the other people that are there. And one thing that I always say, and you remember this from the days in admissions, any high school I've ever worked at, when a college visits, be it a Jesuit college, a state college, a private college, a college overseas, when they come to Gonzaga, you know, you're always welcome on I Street. You're always welcome. You always have a home at Gonzaga. And I really feel that about Jesuit education is that that's part of the hospitality, is that you know, if anyone would need any type of information or if you reach out to me and just say that, you know, if we have a question about this, but if you, particularly if people listening to this, if you have your son or daughter at a high school, or particularly at a Jesuit high school, they're in good hands. They're in good hands at a Jesuit school when it comes to the college process.
No, and thank you for shining a light on it, because I do think it's a process that's in many ways shrouded in mystery, you know, and there is so much that's out there again that you read about in the media, and you're trying to make sense of all of it. And it's particularly for families and kids, and just to know in what good care they are in, you know, at our schools. So,
yeah, no, I always joke that Plato and Socrates was there in admissions committee. with those guys,
right?
Even though there wasn't, and you know, and then you know, so the idea is that the committee doesn't always get it right. So,
yep. No, thank you so much. Thank you, Patrick. It's a good bookend to the year, I think, heading, you know, wrapping up the school year and heading into the summer, just of all that schools have on their plates. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us.
No problem. And let the process, if you have a son or daughter in it, you know, celebrate what's going on rather than dreading it. And I know that's easy to do, but the idea is celebrate. That's the most important thing. And as I said, there are a lot of good schools out there. There are more than just 150 that control the narrative in all the press. There are a lot of great schools out there.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ignatian Inquiry Podcast. You can find contact information for Patrick Gallagher on JSN's website at www.jesuitschoolsnetwork.org/Ignatian-Inquiry-Podcast. The Ignatian Inquiry Podcast is hosted by Dr. Kristen Ross Cully. This episode was recorded, edited, and produced by Kristen Smith and directed by Dr. Kristen Ross Cully. To learn more about the Jesuit Schools Network, please visit www.jesuitschoolsnetwork.org. Stay curious and set the world on fire.